and welcome to...
The Supertone Show.
This is going to be hilarious. Okay, carry on.
It's amazing. Can keep going now.
Okay. Hi.
Yeah, keep going. Okay, we're not going to cut it.
Hello,
keep going.
This show is co-hosted by Simon Campbell and myself, Susie Starlight. We're both musicians and songwriters, and we run a vintage residential recording studio in Valencia, España. Now, we love music, we love making music, listening to it and talking about it. And this is a music-based show where we talk to musicians, producers, engineers, all the creative people who are either working or passing through Valencia. On the show today, we will be talking to our special guest about all things music, from the songs that have inspired to songs that have had completely the opposite effect and make you want to turn the radio off, and stories from the music industry, geeking over favourite bits of gear and what they're up to at the moment, and wherever the conversation just kind of naturally flows. Just to let you know, we've got some really interesting guests as well lined up over the next few months. We've got saxophonist Javier Vercher coming to talk to us, the beautiful Carola Mendoza from Limbertech, guitarist and songwriter David Garzinski, Professor Stephen Weber from Berklee College of Music, Ricardo Curto from the Yamaha School of Music in Valencia, and Casey Dryson, who's the Director of Contemporary Performance at Berklee College of Music in Valencia. So please, come hang out with us for the next couple of hours. Share our podcast with your friends. It's released every other Sunday at 8 o'clock. And if you want to get in touch, you can email us at podcast@supertonerecords.com. But before we move on, today's show is sponsored by DWJ Boutique Pedals.
DWJ.
Perfect. Yeah, and the pedal of choice today, I'm looking at here, it's got two big green knobs on it, and it's an exact copy of a Tone Bender version 1. Oh, shit, I've just hit the mic with it, it's okay. Version 1.5, made famous, of course, by Jimmy Page. And the first two or three Led Zeppelin albums were recorded with this very circuit. So Manu now is looking at us, who's our guest today. He's looking at this pedal with great awe and wonderment. Oh, yeah. But it makes a tremendous racket. And you plug into this fucker and it just sounds like Jimmy Page. You're instantly Jimmy Page, no problem.
Cool.
Anyway.
We can use it later.
Of course. Let's fuzz it up. Yep. Let's put some fuzz on the vocal. Yeah, that's good. So our guest today is Manu Thomas. Welcome, Manu.
Thank you.
And Manu is, he's a bit of a celebrity here in Valencia. He's an expert producer and mixer.
Don't be humble.
Yeah. a Latin Grammy winner, 5 gold records and 1 platinum record. So it's we're very honoured to have him here today. And, of course, even worse, he's watching me actually record this and mix it with all that experience. So he's looking at the levels. I can see his beady engineering eye looking at me to see how
I'm just drinking beer.
Yeah, we're all drinking beers, which is good. Yes, and he's worked with some of the best in the business. He spent some time in Los Angeles. And anyway, we'll hear a bit more from him later on.
See. So let's start off, Manu, with the song that makes you want to turn the radio up, really inspires you.
I've chosen a song from like 10 years ago. But the song that inspires me, or whatever, it changes every 2 months, or because it's all about emotions. So whatever you feel like, it's one song is going to be perfect for the moment. Another.
Yeah, I get that.
And I chose one of the songs of The Killers, and it's called For Reasons Unknown.
Do you want to play it? And we'll have a chat about it afterwards.
I pack my case, I check my face, I look a little bit older, I look a little bit colder.
I flew and fly. I know if destiny's kind, I've got
I haven't heard that for a long time. That was brilliant.
Yeah. actually, when I choose songs, not that I choose, but the songs that stick to my mind, they're not always about sound. It's about the song itself. And this song reminds me when I first got to LA and I got this feeling of like everything was possible. And it was a funny moment, you know. And I remember as well having shotgun a beer,
yeah,
with my friends in Skype. We had like a tavern time, but we were all in Skype in different locations, one in Germany, other in Spain, other in France or whatever, and we got together and drink beers. And this song was about happiness. And
lovely thought. Actually, yeah. When you played it, I was thinking how good that kick drum sounded right at the beginning. It's a great sounding.
Oh yeah, very roomy. Sound.
Yeah, very roomy. But it's roomy. And that's it. It's a lovely, great, big fucking kick, isn't it? Beautiful.
Yeah.
That 22 or something tuned low, you know.
Yeah,
sounds real good.
sometimes they use 808 on top of the kick drum as well.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, even in pop music or rock.
Yeah,
it's not always only for electronic.
Yeah.
But that bottom sometimes comes from an electronic.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, that didn't sound so good. But anyway, it sounded really good, so I'm really into it. So, and the Killers then? Did you like the Killers generally? Or?
Yeah, the two first records, actually. Those one were... That happens with a lot of bands. You know, the first record or the second record, they're great. Because you don't know how long they've been composing and writing music. So they may be been doing this for 10 years and they got the best songs for the first record. And the second record. And the third record, they don't have that much time. They have just 1 year to write music. And that's why not every band, but a lot of bands, after the second record, they're not that good.
Do you think it's also that some musicians try and people please as well, that they're scared to carry on the musical experimentation?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and it's an interesting question. I think it's if you're in a band and you've had a nice record that, you know, everyone loves, you question yourself. It's going to be the same for the next one or it's going to be different? So it's not about pleasing people, but pleasing yourself, and you have to make a choice of keeping the same direction. And the inspiration is not always there, you know. And goes and comes and goes. It's difficult. I mean, it's a difficult career for sure. Music.
It is.
We do know that.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about when Simon had his first album. When I started working with him on his second one, he took a completely different. Road and explored the acoustic Americana and more folk sort of origins.
Yeah.
And that was very different from his sort of blues 36, the first one. And it's like, well, what do you do? Well, you've got to just be yourself.
Exactly.
Because you can't
totally agree.
Please.
Totally agree.
You shouldn't. And it is a very, very difficult thing, but it is your journey. You've got one life.
Yeah. I think the right answer
yeah.
It's do whatever you it comes from your. It comes from inside.
Of course, that's right. Yeah.
And forget about the last thing you did and do whatever you feel like. That's
right.
The more honest. And if you're grown, not grown, but if it doesn't sell or whatever, the record, you're still, at least you're happy. You know,
yeah.
You've done what you...
Being true to yourself.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think it's a wrong idea to do something that you think that it's going to sell.
Yeah.
You know, it has to come from your inside.
Of course. And the interesting thing is, I mean, you're a record producer, so as well as an engineer. And do you consider yourself a record producer foremost and an engineer second or about
no,
the same?
No. Opposite, actually.
Right.
I consider myself, I'm an engineer,
okay.
Actually. I'm an engineer that, I mean, when you're working and get experience over the years, you learn what works and what doesn't during the recording process.
Yeah.
so you can advise people, you know, this is not going to work. And if they like, I mean, it's all about opinion. It's not there, there is no right or wrong way to make a song. It's all about. But it happens that my input in making records, the bands agree a lot. So it's always the same when I'm working for the first time with a band, the first day, they're kind of, I mean, why do you want to change this? You know, they, because they don't know me or we don't know each other that well. But after several days that they agree with my suggestions, and I always do suggestions. I never force anything, you know. I would do this, this way. So when they get, you know, okay, yeah, I really like it, everything changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. And I think that the thing that I've noticed when I've met you, every time I've met you, you're very, very enthusiastic and you're constantly laughing.
Yeah. And I think that's very important on record making.
That's right. Well, the role of the producer is to inspire the artist
exactly
to get, do something better than they would normally
exactly
do.
Exactly. And create that really moment that. To make the magic happens.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. That's the best part of record making, when magic happens, you know.
Yeah.
It's oh.
Well, and that's our philosophy too, is that it's about, that's why we've got the studio here, because we wanted it to be a creative bubble you have fun.
Exactly, exactly.
And to actually allow time.
Yeah.
Because if you go in, like a production line sometimes, you forget, you can get too focused on the wrong thing.
Yeah.
You need to actually have that laughter and that energy.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And that's why I try not to work too much. I mean, I don't do record after record after record.
Yeah.
I choose projects because I really want to enjoy projects. And I don't know, like, people, I mean, it's hard because budgets are low this time and they don't get the money back, for sure. But it's an experience. I mean, when you're making a record, it's a totally different experience. If you come like a place like this studio, for a week, and it's going to be an amazing week, you know, that you forget about everything and you're just working on your record. That's going to be an experience that you're not going to forget.
That's right.
It's going to be in your life. And you don't make that many records, a band, I mean. They don't make that many records to do on a place that is not amazing.
Yeah.
So it's better to just try to get more money or whatever and make it and enjoy it.
That's right, yeah. And I think that's, you're absolutely right. I mean, I've done it a lot of ways. You know, I've been in residential studios. I've recorded it piecemeal where you go in and you do it in an evening and then you go and do something else during the day or, you know, and it is definitely a better way of doing it, where you can actually immerse yourself for a week or 2 weeks or however long it takes to get your record done, you know, all at once. Because I think after the first couple of days, you really start to get into the role of it, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like being on holiday. If you work all year and you go away for 2 weeks, the first week you spend sleeping and just trying to get back to your own thoughts, because you're always thinking about work and other things and bills. And then when you get to that beautiful place, one morning you wake up and you go, hello, me, where have you been for the last year? And then you spend the next week making plans for the next year of, I'm not going to do that again, and I'm going to do this. And then you get back into work and it feels like you haven't been away the first day.
Yeah.
But a lot of people obviously and have to do that.
And it's, I try to get that feeling of making something special from the very first day. You know, I don't wait for several days to get used to the studio or whatever. I try to make everyone super comfortable, in a good vibe, you know, good environment, and make them feel like rock stars, you know, for a week.
Yeah,
that's the point.
Well, that's right. When you're doing your own record, you know, you are.
Yeah.
That's right.
You should be.
Of course. And it's a great thing.
It is. Now, talking about, so some people go into the studio and make great music. Other people make music that makes you want to turn the radio off because you can't stand it.
Oh, yeah. He's been working on this close
yeah,
mic.
Yeah, I know. And we're going to do some sound bites after because it is
this
great.
Is proximity effect.
So tell us then, what's the song when you listen to it? It makes your skin crawl and you just think, nah, I'm not having that.
There are millions. Actually, nowadays, most of the music is like that. But I'm going to just choose one song.
Who's
I have to
by?
Say the name?
Yes, please.
Do I?
Yes, sí.
All right. It's Amaya Montero.
Sí.
And the song is called Quiero Ser.
Okay, this is Turn the Radio Off. So 20 seconds
You've
of
got to
obligatory
listen to it for 20 seconds.
Yeah. Listening. And then you tell us, okay?
All right.
You ready? Okay, go for it.
We've not heard this before. Okay, please.
Please, Manny. I think we
You don't like it? I was getting into the mood.
Well, we haven't heard that before. This is all of a shock today because all the tracks that Manu's brought, he just landed on us now, so we're hearing him for the first time. That was horrific.
How does it make you feel listening to that track?
Okay, I actually don't like to speak bad things about people. So I'm going to make an exception here. Mm-hmm. I just hate that vocal tone. You know, it's disgusting. It's just, I don't want to be her friend at all, you know? And the worst thing is that this record was mixed on LA, in LA, in A&M Records. It's
okay.
An amazing studio. So it's like, you go there to make this crap here.
Is that okay. Right?
Yeah, it is right, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So they got a group.
I just found it because my prima, my cousin.
Yes,
I found a CD, and I was reading the booklet, and I found it was mixed in LA in that studio that I knew. It's called Henson these days.
Okay.
It was called A&M Records, and it's Henson, and it's an amazing studio in LA. So I just borrowed the CD. Because I wanted to check the sound, you know. But the songs are so awful.
Well, you know, I mean, it's you get something like that, and it is very striking. That I don't know.
It's a bit candy.
Speechless, actually.
It's candy.
Yeah.
It feels very candy-esque to me. You know, like a chocolate, but and also as if someone's got a cold.
Yeah,
that kind of
exactly.
Blocked
exactly.
Nasal tone.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There is something about his tone, her tone, that it's, to me, it's, let's say, I don't like it.
Yeah. Well, like, I don't think we should speak too ill of this, but I can tell you that has really shocked
it's
me.
It's funny, though, actually, saying that, because a friend of mine, I put on Facebook the other night about Turn the Radio Off feature for the podcast, and a friend of mine, Foxy, came on and messaged me and said that anybody with a really rough vocal tone, like Rod Stewart, she can't actually hear because it just turns her off. But I said, so that means you don't like Tom Waits then? And she said, no, I like Tom. So I think some tones of vocal make people go, wah.
Yeah. I think either you sound like a record or you don't.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And that applies to everything, you know, on a guitar. When you're making, you're recording a song, either it sounds like a record when you're looking for a guitar tone.
Yes.
Either it sounds like, oh, this is it, or it's not.
I totally agree with you.
And her vocal tone, it doesn't sound like it's like not a singer. I mean, I don't trust her. It's just a person, I don't know,
yeah.
A girl making a melody, but it's not a singer. That's what I feel,
Yeah. Well, I get that. Now, interestingly enough, when you're selecting an act then, are you very careful over who you work with? So you will only work with somebody who you think you're going to make to sound good?
No. I've been thinking about it. Like, should I be focusing more on one style that I think I like more? But I'm very eclectic. You know, I like good music. Mm. And I find good music in every style. Good music and bad music. There is bad rock music, and there is good rock music, and there is bad For me, it's, I don't know, I work on, I've been working on flamenco, electronic music. My stuff is rock, basically. But it's funny, but I don't get that many rock bands. I'm working more on other styles, you know, but I actually enjoy them, you know.
Yeah. And if you are producing something, then when you say your favorite, you like rock, and is that like metal or is it sort of
Every kind of, that's general. Yeah. When I was a drummer a long time ago, 1899.
Wow.
I was a drummer and I was playing metal. Death metal, actually.
Really?
Oh, yeah,
that scares me.
Yeah. That was like going to a gym, you know. And I stopped listening to death metal when I was 19 or whatever, that I got into the studio to work. And since then, I've been, you know, I opened all the genres that I've been working with. And I just enjoy, I mean, it's, as I told you before, it's all about emotion, and I get emotion out of any style. As long as it gets the emotion, it's cool with me.
Right.
And I think that's really important too, because you can be easily boxed into a certain genre.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, our tastes are actually wider than that, because good music is good music. I always used to think it's whatever makes my feet tap, whatever connects with me.
Exactly.
I have an open mind. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. And it is a personal taste. It's subjective. I mean, what I think is good music, it's not good music for other people. Mm. So it's just a matter of taste of everyone. So I try to work on what I think it's, you know, it moves me.
Right. So who is your favorite band and why do you love them?
I don't have a favorite band. I used to be a fan of bands before, a long time ago, on my metal era, you know.
Okay.
Like Sepultura, which was the first band that I really got into. Sepultura, Metallica, Pantera, Cannibal Corpse, heavy stuff.
Hardcore.
Yeah. And now I'm, like, since I'm working professionally in this, I usually now listen to music that it's related to the work that I'm going to do.
Okay.
So I don't follow bands anymore. Because I think what we were talking before, it's really difficult to find bands that they keep making good records every time, you know. Most of the bands that I loved, I don't like them now.
You like them when they started?
Yeah.
The first
when
two
they
albums,
yeah,
you said, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so, even sometimes the production changes, so you might like the band, but the sound of the style isn't as relevant today as it was at the time, because I bought some vinyl the other day, and it didn't sound as I remembered it, because it was a dated style of production on the music, even though the songs are great.
Yeah.
It's an odd thing, that's just in the sound.
And actually, you also changes.
Yes.
You change as well.
I know.
So whatever you like
soul
now,
disco.
You know, you may hate it tomorrow.
Yeah, and I mean, the record Starlet's talking about that. I mean, we were listening to it the other day, but there was certainly a point during the 80s and 90s where music, the production of it, went into a very... it's difficult to say bad. It's a very characteristic phase. I mean, if we look back now at stuff that was recorded in the 50s and 60s, and early 70s, it still sounds good. A lot of people say it sounds good.
Yeah.
You know, but as soon as you get into that 80s thing, they did things in production which have not carried through.
Yeah,
they haven't stood the test of time at all, you know. You know, the snare drum sounds, those.
Yeah,
you know.
Because they could do it. It's a matter of limitation. It's like they say, I don't remember the sentence, the limitation of freedom, or the freedom of limitation.
Yeah.
When in the 80s, then you got 24 tracks against when you had just 4 tracks or 8 tracks in the 70s. And you have more reverbs, and everything was, it's like when computers came out.
Yeah.
More freedom, more tools to manage. And the 80s is a clear example of, oh, new technology, let's use it, you know? And it's too much. I mean, it's overused.
Yeah, all the Fairlights and samplers and all that. And the,
yeah, exactly. Was,
and also more channels on the board. You know, you could actually create something with you know 40, 50, 80 different tracks if you chose to. Yeah, you know?
It's like using every cup in the cupboard because you can, because there's 40 cups instead of one.
Yeah.
We watched that documentary on Science City a while back, and they were saying when they went to digital, everyone was going digital. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's when the music got completely sterilized almost, because everyone was just going effects crazy, weren't they, really?
Yeah.
And it did completely change.
I think that, in my opinion, right, when the computers came into act on studios, it was cheaper to make a record. You know, like, I could record something with my PC at that time, and make a demo or whatever.
Yeah.
And before, you couldn't. Either you went to a studio with an analog tape and it was really expensive. But now with computers, everyone can make a record. You know, there is no more demos like it was before. There is no that professionalism, I think, in the industry.
That's right. So you said you don't have a favorite band or artist, but you are going to choose one for the purpose of the show.
Por favor.
Yeah. Let's play John Mayer, I Don't Trust Myself. Enjoy.
Who do you love? Hold on to whatever will get you through. Hold on to whatever you find, baby. I don't trust myself when loving you. Hold on to whatever you find, baby. Hold on to whatever will get you.
Cool. I really love, you know, the simplicity of this record, actually. And it's something that we all say, including myself, like the simpler, the better. But I say it, but I don't do it, you know. I would like to do it more, but it's super... That's the most difficult when with three elements or... It works a song beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
And especially Steve Jordan, the drummer. He's one of my favorite drummers ever. He doesn't do any break. There's no cymbals when the chorus comes in. There's nothing. So the music itself goes up. It's not his, you know, he's pushing the chorus or whatever. It's just the music breathing. It's really cool.
And John Mayer himself, his songwriting is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, it is. And he's playing.
He's a great guitar player, you know?
Yeah.
I think this thing about space, though, is all about the arrangement.
And it I think, is,
and,
yeah.
And the technical ability of the player. I mean, you know, because all those elements there are pretty simple. Even his guitar playing, his solo playing, it's very sparse. When you put it all together with his voice, it's just beautiful, you know?
Yep.
And I love that little bit at the end with those horns just at the end, just keeping going. And Steve Jordan produced that, right?
Yep. I think I don't know for sure, but just knowing his play style, I can understand why it's so simple, the whole record, you know, with few elements. And I think everyone in the band has to be in that mood, in that direction.
We were just talking before the show, actually, and Manu's going to mix one of our singles
I'll make it complicated. I will do just the opposite of what I say.
Well, I think what we're going to do is that we're going to have the minimum number of fucking instruments, and
there is a mute button in there as well.
It's
so
a big red one.
That will.
Yeah,
that,
lots of
sometimes
red
that helps. You know? Mixing.
I tell you what really helps us is when someone and I write together and when we're working on arrangements, we don't look at personalities or who can do what. We think about serving the song.
Mm-hmm. And it's very organic. Everything that I've heard, I've listened of your work, it's super organic, very musical. It's not overproduced. You know, it's on that direction of just people playing music.
That's right. Well, thank you. That's a lovely thing to say.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we'll see.
Where is my money?
It's in
the briefcase.
More beer.
Might get better. More beer.
Just going back to John Mayer. We love him. You know.
I love the feel of that track. Yeah. It was it sort of rocked you in a gentle, tranquilo kind of way.
Yeah, super, super tranquilo. Yeah.
Quite
and
beautiful.
That and that simple drum things, though, that I always remember hearing a story of Nile Rodgers and Chic. And when he got the band together, it was Bernard Edwards and Tony Thompson on drums, of course.
Uh-huh.
And Tony Thompson, and he got Tony Thompson in the studio, and the first thing he did, he took away his cymbals, all his cymbals, and his tom-toms.
Okay.
And he said, right, you have a kick, a snare, and a hi-hat. That's all you're going to play.
Yeah.
And if you listen to the Chic stuff or that stuff that...
Amazing.
That's it.
Oh, yeah. Limit yourself.
Yeah.
You know? And it's going to be... Limitation is good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Limitation is good.
Yeah. You know, when you first start out as well, because with my bass playing, with a year and a half in, when I watch and hear other bass players and they're quite technically brilliant, quite beautiful. I quite enjoy where I'm at because I'm keeping it simple.
Oh, yeah.
And the feel is the thing I'm totally...
Oh, yeah. I mean, technicality, it's called technicality.
Yeah,
it's, it's only good if it serves to the song. I mean,
si.
For me, all these guitar heroes or drum heroes, you know, they're so boring.
Yeah.
So boring. There's no music. Si. It's just exercises. Like, oh, look at me, 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 look at me. Oh, wow, man. Wow. I'm out of here.
See, there's me getting off on the one. I'm really just
amazing.
Have a simple
I'm out of
bass line.
Here.
It's funny, isn't it? Well, anyway, I've got I've not seen this before, but we've got a photo which you've kindly sent to us of the contents
of my fridge.
See, so
what's this
first,
all about?
It's about
it's rotten food.
It's getting to know you. It's getting to know what's in your fridge. It's,
where
it's about
can you
being
see
personal.
That?
My first impressions are it's very clean, very ordered.
There's lots of beer in there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The bottom two shelves.
I don't know if I don't have the beaker here, but probably you can see four of my homebrew beer.
Ah. Brewing.
Yeah.
So tell us more about your brewing.
I'm really bad about it. You know, I've been brewing beer four times. Only one got a good result. But I keep trying. You know, I'm brewing the beer with a friend.
Yeah.
And we have this, not a dream, but, you know, we have this in mind. Like someday we will make a really amazing beer. And we can sell it, not just to get money, but, you know, we can share the beer on pubs or whatever.
And also you're a cook. I mean, because last time you came here, you cooked us lunch, I remember, which was fantastic.
Oh, yeah, I like cooking as well, yeah. It's really good to have passion on other things, you know, not just music.
Yeah.
And I think it's about the way you are. I mean, if you're passionate about music, you're going to be passionate about all other things.
And also you're a chili fiend, aren't you? You like hot
sauce. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Hot sauce. I got a friend of mine, and he's from England as well. He was one of my students, and he told me, have you ever tried spicy food? That was 10, 12 years ago. And I said, yeah, I don't know, I think so. No, if you say I think so, you haven't tried real spicy at
all. Yeah.
So, yeah, he cooked one day with super spicy food, you know, and I loved it. Actually, next day, this is a funny story. I had that was right before I went to LA, so I had to do an English test to be able to study there.
Yeah.
So I had to go to Barcelona. And the night before, we had dinner, super spicy dinner. So the next day, I went to the airport, and I went to the bathroom. And I say, what the hell is that? I didn't know, and I didn't relay that to the spicy thing. I thought, oh, fuck. I mean, I'm going to make the test, and I'm going back. I'm fucking going to the hospital, you know? I look at the toilet. I expected being like blood or whatever. Well, what the fuck is this? I was so worried, actually. You know, something is totally wrong down here.
Abajo.
So I was in Barcelona, super worried. You know, like, oh, fuck. And I went to... And this guy, my friend, called me. Hey, man, how are you doing? You've done the test? Oh, no, but, man, you know, I went to the bathroom this morning and he was laughing. You know, this is spicy.
The
you know?
Side effects.
Yeah, the side effects. See? The ring of fire, man.
The ring of
fire. Oh, okay, so it's...
Well, down to the burning ring of fire.
Burns. The ring of fire.
And it was funny because that's the only time I've experienced that. I mean, not the only one, but the more impressive one, you know, because I didn't expect it at all, you know.
The big surprise.
The big surprise. Exactly.
Isn't it funny?
It's funny. It's so funny.
Well, that has definitely cheered me up.
Before we can move on to the song that changed it all, just tell us a bit about why did you go to LA?
Oh, to keep my dream.
Yeah, well, I mean, tell us why. I don't really understand.
Oh,
I don't know
why,
your story.
Because,
so what did you do in LA and why did you go?
Well, I wanted to try. You know, I have I was 25 year old, 26, mm-hmm. and I've always had this abstract idea of going to LA to make it happen.
Okay.
But I didn't speak English.
Sí.
And I was just working here, and it was like a blurry idea. But one day I saw a catalog of one of the schools in LA. I remember that was a Sunday, and I was looking at the catalog with these pictures of, oh, fuck. And the next day I woke up, and I knew that I was going to LA, for sure. And I didn't have the money to go there, and I didn't speak English, but I knew that I was going there for sure, you know. So I just focused all my thing on doing that. And fortunately, I got a job in, beside of working the music business, I got a work in a university. I was teaching. That I met this England guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Wilf Wilson.
Who tried to destroy your internal organs.
Yeah, he tried. Okay, let's leave it there.
Yeah.
So I got the money, and I got some money, and I started to study English, and I just went there. And I got to this school, LA Recording School,
yeah,
that I don't recommend, but it was the right thing to do for me.
Okay.
Because it was 9 months that I could spend the time in LA to see if I adapt myself to the English and I can work it out to get the working visa and everything.
Okay.
So it was, I didn't learn that much. I mean, the teachers in that school weren't, you know, that good. But I had experience on SSL, on NIF, consoles, and I actually went to the school to get internships, to get to the industry, to get connected. But that year, that was 2005.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the worst years in the industry in LA. You know, the big studios, they were doing nothing, and nobody got an internship. So I had to call, you know, sending emails to everybody, producers, engineers, and work my way.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. What a beautiful story, though, because you're actually a man of your convictions. You actually put all that effort into going. A lot of people will have dreams,
yeah,
but won't really do anything about it.
Yeah, having dreams is not enough.
No.
You really need to want to make them happen.
Yeah, yeah. Very inspiring.
I love
to hear.
How long were you in LA in total then?
5 years.
Wow.
2005 to 2010. And then I got kicked out of the country.
Okay.
Because they didn't renew my working visa, my artist visa.
Mm-hmm.
Because of my fault, actually. You know, I had an artist visa and I had a sponsor. And legally, you have to work through your sponsor to any other companies.
Yes.
So the companies has to pay. They have to pay to your sponsor, and your sponsor has to pay you.
Yeah.
And that took a long time. I didn't have the money. And a lot of people having O-1 visa, the artist visa, told me, no, you can just charge to yourself. You know, you can make invoices under your name. We all do it. And I said, okay, yeah. Well, so I'll do it. So I spent 3 years with all the invoices under my name. And when I went to renew the visa, I got inspected, like randomly inspection or whatever.
Yeah.
And they told me that I have to show that I've been paid by my sponsor.
Yeah.
And all the invoices were from other companies.
Wow.
So I didn't renew the visa.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, can I come back? On a positive note, if you were still in LA, you
wouldn't
be here
right
now.
Exactly, I know. That's what I can.
That's right. So you wouldn't
I know somehow where it would be a Supertone studio.
We always think about this, though. It's like there's no point having regrets. The life is the life that you have, and what you have now, it's meant to be. It's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't miss it,
no.
You know, even though it was an amazing time.
Yeah.
I never look back in time, ever.
Well, it's gone.
I'm very dramatic about it. I mean, it's not that I'm scared or fear of whatever, but I just enjoy the present. I mean, it's
the only got.
Yeah, that's what we've got. You know,
that's right, right here, right now, and it's
and it's all about enjoying your present.
Absolutely, yeah, and you know,
and eating spicy. That's it. And so drinking beer.
Spices that changed it all for you. What's the record? Moving on to the next feature. What's the record that changed it all for you, the song?
The song, it's going to be Metallica's Sad But True.
We'll be right back.
Metallica, sad, but true.
Yeah.
What inspired you with that song?
I actually wanted to dedicate myself to music. When I was a drummer, and when this record came, I was the best sounding drums I've ever heard, you know, in my life. And still, you know, it's something that a lot of bands try to replicate, and they, you know, it doesn't sound like it at all.
Lars Ulrich, that's the
Lars Ulrich, yeah,
see, yeah, and I mean, he's a monster.
It's not that. I mean, I don't know. I don't like his playing. I mean, in this record, it's amazing, but in general, I don't know. In life, you can tell that is how. What's his level, you know, in life, you know, and it's not that amazing. And I don't know, but the sound of this record and the take, and the drums are very musical, you know, all the breaks, you could sing all the breaks, you know, in the whole record. And I remember watching the video A Year and a Half, which is a video of the recording. And I remember he was waking up at 1 afternoon, having a shower,
yeah,
going into the live room and start recording. And I said, I want to do that, you know, all my life. I just want to do that. But I was playing drums, but I quit playing drums a few years later because I found the studio and, oh, this is where I want to be. Yeah, I mean, this was not the metal that I am. This is really soft of... in comparison of what I was playing and everything.
Yeah, because you were playing stuff a lot faster.
Yeah.
Because this is quite, it's almost doom. It's quite, it's quite exactly. Slow. And but it's, you know.
But the sound of it, you know, it's like.
Yeah.
It's massive.
Yeah, you know, it's massive.
Tuned down guitars. Oh, yeah.
And you know that with the kick drum, they were using 18 inches subwoofer.
No.
In the live room. So the toms and the kick drum were into the console and from sense in the console to the speakers.
Yeah, so in the live, in the lower, right.
Yeah, so it wasn't reinforced, you know, all the low end of the kick drum and the toms.
Wow.
And within the room was, mics.
Oh, right, into the room
mics. Into the room mics.
Right.
That's why it's so massive. Wow. And it was one of the first, not the first record, but the early records that they were sampling drums, you know, the snare. It's a sample.
Okay.
And they didn't have computers back then, but they were using a reverb unit that they could sample and they were triggering. And
Well, we have in the studio here, which is part of my live guitar rig, the 2290, which was one of the original, because that was one of the original samplers, and you could do that on that.
As well.
And play it back, yeah. And also the AMS, the original AMS delays, which are horrifically unreliable.
They're very musical.
They sound great, but, you know, you always need two or three.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you turn them on and all the letters go brrrr, and it says it's fucked, basically. And then you turn it off, turn it back on again. So if you have two or three, you're okay. But, cool, man.
Cool.
Well, that's a great record, great record.
It's I always find that style of music kind of, it's quite angry, isn't it? And very passionate.
Yep.
Especially, you know, from my background of like folk and the Carpenters and all that kind of melodic.
This
to hear
about,
this is quite extreme. It's like very
Yeah, it is. And it's when I was playing death metal, and for me music was all about brutality, you know, and energy. The more energy.
Yeah.
The better song.
I can imagine, you know,
that
if
was
I was
my,
a drummer,
yeah.
Play the bloody kit.
Yeah. The more energy, the better the song. It was all about that. You know, it's not about melody or chorus. Who cares about chorus? You know, just one brutality.
Brutality.
Yeah.
It's interesting though.
That's the measure. That was the measure.
You do find that people, as they mature as musicians, as drummers, you can see that they go through that phase and then they actually start to, they've got it out of their system and then they move on and they explore other things. But it's definitely a part of your experience.
And actually,
it's
another emotion, you know, brutality.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's about getting emotion out of music. It's all about that.
But okay. I think if you go and see this sort of music live, it really does. I mean, I remember seeing the godfathers of this sort of music, Black Sabbath. And when you went to see them, it was like an awesome thing. You know, the racket. You know, that racket being the noise, the feel, the power.
Yeah,
you through know. Your flesh, or I'd imagine.
Woman. Yeah, of those guys, it was incredible. You know. Yeah. And I've seen Metallica at a festival, and they were actually great, you know, really, really good, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not a huge fan, don't have a lot of records, but, you know, they were great live.
Yeah, probably more about the sound of them.
Yeah.
Than the song. I mean, I really like the songs on this record, but I'm more about, I mean, it's more impressive to me, the sound of it, than the songs itself.
Now, later on, of course, Metallica were very famous for their heavy compression and distorted sound. Yeah. Which album was it? I can't remember
Death
which one.
Death Magnetic.
Death Magnetic, that's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, in fact, we were at a little masterclass the other week with the mastering engineer.
Uh-huh.
With you.
Yeah.
And did he master? He mastered that?
No.
Oh, he didn't master
no,
that?
No, he didn't master that. No. It was Tom Jensen. But right. He didn't want to appear on the credits.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I mean, I know one of the guys who mixed that record. Actually, I work with him.
Okay.
Andrew Sheps.
Oh, it was Andrew, did
yeah,
it, was it?
Andrew
right.
Mixed half of the record. And it's good for people to know that when Rick Rubin was producing the record, so how it works on mixing wise, it's that they first do a shootout of mixers.
Yeah.
So the first one, the same song for different mixers. So they choose one mixer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was Andrew. And then Andrew started mixing a song, so the process is always the same. He mixes a song, he sends the mix to Rick Rubin, he makes modifications, go back and forth a couple of times, three times, whatever, until Rick Rubin is happy, and then Rick Rubin sends the mixes to the band, and they make modifications, go back and forth, so it's probably just 1 week per mix or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the end result, it's not only about Andrew, you know.
It's
a mixture. It's what they wanted, actually. Rick Rubin and Metallica. That's what they wanted. Because he didn't stop mixing. Actually, two engineers. The other engineer was the recording engineer who mixed. And he's one of the best engineers, recording engineers ever. He's amazing. I don't remember his name. He's not famous because he's a recording engineer, but he's done all the Rick Rubin stuff, the Black Sabbath 13.
Yeah.
Andrew mixed it as well, you know.
I can understand that, you know, and it is odd how somebody can have that. It can get in the press about that and people talking him and blame, maybe fingers pointing at somebody, when actually, really, that is your role, is to, as you say, you work with people.
To please the band.
You're helping facilitate the sound of their vision.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
and that's the thing. I mean, you know, if the band are actually, if they okayed it and they wanted it like that, it's their artistic decision, regardless of what we think or the press thinks or the, you know, the loudness war people that are talking about, oh, you know, it's mastered, it's compressed to fuck and it's, you know, it's no dynamic range. But if that's what the band wanted, then, you know...
You're working for them.
Yeah, exactly. And is it up to us to, you know, to complain about that or to
well, they obviously pushed the boundary because we're talking about it.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean? It hit a wall, didn't it, really? But
I've
watched some...
On a funny... is this distortion, actually, talking about...
I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, there was a bit of distortion, though, on
my volume. Yeah, I don't know if it's the monitoring or it's actually distorted. Anyway, it's talking about loudness war.
Yeah, the loudness war.
Here we go. All right. So a funny thing that Andrew says is like, you know, the loudness war is over and I won, you know. I won.
Nicely said,
I'm the winner. Move on to next.
See, I watched a video with Andrew before I knew that you knew him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was doing
masterclass. Amazing. He's an amazing guy.
Music.
He's super smart. Very nice guy, you know, we're close friends. You know, now he's living in England.
Yeah.
He moved from LA to England.
Right. He's living
yeah,
in England.
His wife. His wife is from London. I don't know from which city, but yeah. And they moved to England, so now they're here. They're closer.
It's like a family, though, isn't it? The whole music community, really.
Oh, yeah,
it's fantastic. Oh, yeah, yeah. You just can't beat it.
Yeah,
they're really.
Yeah, fantastic. Totally fantastic.
Yeah, especially when you get connected with people with your tastes. You know,
exactly.
It's really cool.
Right. So, well, let's move on to the next.
First time. The first time. What was the first? Tell us your story about all your memories of the first time you were. He produced a band, or the first time that you were, it was your role for engineering, something of.
I started recording myself with a four track.
Hello, is this me? Is this really me? You're liking this proximity effect.
I had a four track tape machine, cassette machine. So when I was playing drums, so I recorded myself with a few mics, and then I discovered I could play just a little guitar, but I could play, and I could just play a song with all the instruments. And I remember discovering, because there was no internet, the information you had to look for whatever, and it was really difficult to get information.
Books.
Even books, just only books. That was the only resource. And I discovered myself, like, oh, if I can do, you know, I have four tracks, I can have three tracks and bounce to the, like, ping pong, you know. But I didn't read it anywhere. I was just myself, like, oh, what if I have an infinite tracks now, you know, I can do. So I just started recording myself, and then I bought an 8-tracks mini disc recorded. So I went to rehearsal rooms from bands, record them there, and then a few years later, there was a rehearsal place in close to Valencia in a town, and they built a studio, and I just was running the studio, and I recorded, you know, hundreds of small bands, you know, demos, you know. That's where I cut my teeth there. And I don't know. And I don't know exactly which one it was, like the first or the... But that's where I started.
Well, that's great, because everyone starts somewhere. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's very important to start from the bottom, you know.
Yeah.
Well, recording from four track and bouncing down onto one, that is certainly the
bottom. Why not? Now, so you.
How many bounces did it take for you to find out that actually the quality started to...
I couldn't. Probably at that time I couldn't tell the degradation of quality, you know. I didn't have ears. It was just not about sound, but recording tracks, you know.
Of course, yeah.
Brutality.
Brutality.
We've got it back in. So what's your favourite piece of gear that you use now?
Because we've talked about this, last time you were here, and the fact that you tend to mix now in the box, which for the people out there that don't know, it means mixing within the computer as opposed to using a console.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, if you were in a studio and you had outboard like we have here, what would be your favourite
thing? Yeah, a favourite, of course, it's going to be a compressor.
Of course.
And the 1176.
Of course.
You can't go wrong with, I mean, it's really hard to go wrong with that. And I like its simplicity as well. When I'm recording, I'm about to get the tone as fast as possible and get in the mood, and the musician not wasting time tweaking anything.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I really like to have the perfect tone. I don't record until it's not, you know, the right tone that sounds like a record.
Yeah.
Whatever instrument it is. And with 1176, you get that energy, not just for controlling peaks or dynamics or whatever, you get energy. You get energy out of that compressor, for sure.
Yeah, they are amazing things. And I mean, as you said, they are very simple, which is the great thing about them, because they're quick to set up.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult to fuck it up, really.
You want more compression, it's all about the release time.
Yeah.
And I always go fast. I mean,
and I process a lot when I'm recording. I'm not recording plain, like with no effect or with no EQ. I do whatever it needs.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I'm not fear about, you know, like, oh, what if it's too much compressed? It's never too much compressed.
Yeah, because you know what you're doing.
Yeah. Actually, what you do mixing, you can just do it, you know, recording. If you know that you're going to compress the vocal that hard in mixing, always, kind not always, but yeah, generally. So you do the same when recording. That feeling of a finished, kind of finished record when you are recording. And that motivates the artist better. You play better because you hear, you know, like a finished product already. And it's a better experience. Mm-hmm.
That's a really, I've always done it completely different. I've always tried to record with no EQ or nothing at all. So I get a great sound when I'm recording it and then put it onto, well, tape or you record it on
whatever.
Your disc. And then deal with it later on. So you get a really good sound, but certainly compression I've tended to...
Leave it for mixing.
Yeah, leave it for mixing. But it's very interesting because that requires balls of steel, I would say. Big balls of steel.
Yeah.
Because if you fuck it up when you're recording it, and it's great.
No, but once you have confidence on, you know, I've been doing this for like 20 years. Not 20, but almost 20 years. And I don't know, you just do it. I mean, it's, you trust your ears. And I've been in studios, for example. I remember being in Castellón recording Presuntos Implicados drums for a record. And you know, it was sounding really big, the drums. And I was picking in six or seven preamps and compressors because I actually like that color, you know. Mm-hmm. On Neve's preamps, I go over the top of which is so super distorted, and then I go back click by click. I don't go one by one up, you know. I go backwards, you know. I go, where is the limit? I need to know where is the limit. I go past the limit and then I go back one click or two clicks. But you have to know where is the limit on everything to get the max result, you know?
I get that.
And the engineer in the studio, the owner, he was like, hey, man, do you see this? It's in red light. And I say, oh, yeah.
Of course.
Oh, yeah, of course, man. That means that it's working. No, but you like what you hear? Oh, yeah. So what? So there are... I mean, a lot of people are afraid of numbers and needles on gain reduction.
Yeah.
See?
You know, mine could be 360 degrees, the needle, you know, going...
Spinning round.
Yeah, spinning around. Gain reduction.
Well, on this console here, on our Trident, unless you've actually got the meters, you know, really maxing out into the red, you know, it's not happening, you know?
Yeah.
It gives it balls.
You get the call. I mean, it's it's like recording on tape or recording on computer. Mm. Recording on tape, it's like a movie. When you're watching a movie, you don't see reality. You see something dreamy, something special, something that it's like a dream. Tape, it's the same for me. Tape, it's not real. I mean, computer, it's more real than tape. Whatever is the sound in computer, you capture like reality. On tape, it's not reality; it's more dreamy. There is something else really difficult to describe. But everything, it's more musical and glues together better.
It's softer. That's right, and it's like and that's a good expression. It glues together because it's like having computers. It's like having a load of frozen vegetables, and you mix them together, and they're all together, but they're still individual.
Yeah.
With tape,
they stick together.
Everything as though they've been cooked. Yeah. And they're a bit more mushy. Slow.
Slow fire and slow cooking.
Slow cooked.
Slow cooked for tape.
Yeah. That's cool.
I like that. So, what I'm really interested in is tell us your stories about this thing called a Grammy Award. Then.
Mm-hmm. So, the Grammy Award.
I know. I mean, how fantastic is that?
Yeah. I got the Grammy for Niña Pastori.
Sí.
I mixed half of the record, of yeah. that record. And the other engineer was Oscar Binader.
Sí.
Amazing engineer, really good friend. He's from Madrid. And he called me to get into mix half of the record. And the artist won the best flamenco record for that year. I was called because it was also actually more about a rock. It wasn't just a flamenco record. It was more rock-oriented.
Yeah.
With drums, rock drums and everything. And, yeah, we're good friends, so he called me, and yeah, we won that.
Congratulations, and actually, by the way.
Thank you, thank
that
you.
That is a great achievement, isn't
fantastic.
It?
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually when I was doing my website, that was 2012, a year later, we're just researching of the Latin Grammys, and I find out that I have at that time 4 more nominations that I didn't know. So that's good to know. Good to know.
How crazy and is that? So
yeah,
nominated
now this year as well. I'm nominated.
Are you?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
That's on November 19th. Is going to be the Latin Grammys.
Really?
But it's been since 2009 to this year. I've been almost every year nominated.
What? Like how six, wonderful!
Wow.
6 years consecutive.
We didn't know that.
Yeah, because the website it's not updated. Yeah,
see,
it's
see.
Like I did it and it's yeah, and I think the one that is I'm more proud of. We didn't win it, mm-hmm. but it was the best recording of the year 2 years ago.
Okay,
I had a nomination and that's that's.
But to
more
get
my work, our work. I mean, the work that Nacho Mañó produced. It was a record from an artist from Colombia, Santiago Cruz. Nacho Mañó is the producer, amazing producer. We work together a lot. Nacho Mañó, Oscar Binader, and me. We are 3 of us. Nacho producer and 2 I recording engineer, and Oscar is the mixing. Engineer,
okay.
we do a lot of records on this setup. Yeah, and it was recorded here in Valencia, and it was nominated for best record of the year.
Great.
But and on the same page, we had Alejandro Sanz, Luis Fonsi, so we didn't win for sure. Yeah, but it was really rewarding.
I'm totally stoked for you. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And especially the fact that you didn't know that you were nominated for.
Like,
I think I think Valencia itself is a great place for music, and I think that it's this sort of energy that you and hopefully us and many of the other musicians are putting in here that's going to make it one of the greatest cities in Europe for music. That's what we're really after.
It
that's
can be,
really
yeah.
You know,
it really can be. Yep.
Because it's got everything. It's cheap, it's got the weather, it's got some fantastic musicians and obviously great producers, engineers. Yeah. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah. And with the Spanish culture as well, with the bands, and there's a lot of music in families here. It's traditional. And
and
that's what I think, the combination of everything, with Valencia being such a beautiful city and the people are equally as beautiful. And it's just, and I think that's another reason why we wanted to start the podcast, is because we're meeting so many beautiful people
and
here. It's like we just want to share the conversation.
A terrific job, like being active about music scene here in Valencia, that it's never been, that active. And having this residential studio, which is a dream. It can be a dream for any band to come here and experience that, what's like making a real record.
A real record,
Real record.
Yeah, we're living while we're living our life while we've got it.
Dead right. Rocking it out, man.
Yeah.
On number 11.
On number 11.
Sounds like my mic, actually. I think I've got a bit of... I don't know what's happened here, but I've got a really bad cold. But anyway, I don't think it's that. Anyway, right here, right now, what are you doing right now? Because apparently when you arrived this morning, you had a hangover. And you
exactly.
just finished a record.
Yesterday we finished a record. We finished mixing.
So you got
mastering.
Absolutely pissed last night?
Oh, yeah. Why not?
That's right.
Yeah. Lately, I'm...
Well, that's good. So, it's... what was the record?
Hangover.
Yeah.
The record is a fantastic record. It's pop. Pop music from a Cuban artist.
She's called Jenny, and it's going to come out next year, probably. And yeah, it's been recorded in Cuba, six songs in Cuba, and six songs recorded here, and I mixed the whole thing. And I don't know, about all about emotions, in the mixing, it's been bringing up all these emotions out of the song, and hopefully, yeah.
Fantastic.
It's like I'm less worried about the sonics itself. I mean, even of course I'm not. I'm paying attention to everything, but I'm more focused on bringing that emotion and to be, you know, the song to be on fire, you know, inner fire, more than this frequency or this guitar could be. I mean, it's all about that. Yeah. I don't know.
But I think now that there is a big drive in music generally, and I think this is what's going to make people come back to music. I mean, people consume lots of music.
Oh, yeah.
They're not buying it. They're not actually really engaging with music because I think it's become very plastic. And because, you know, and I think we as recording engineers and producers and stuff, you know, over the years have contributed to this problem because it's not been organic. And I think you're right. I think we've been thinking too much about, you know, the sonics of it rather than conveying the emotion. You know, people like Ethan Johns, you know, at the moment, he's doing some very organic sounding records, you know, with lots of leakage into the vocal mics and, you know, and there's a lot of very natural stuff.
And real. Yeah. And you can tell two guys, three guys, four guys playing.
Right. And it's our job to capture it and obviously to play and, you know, to write the material and stuff. But it, you know, to get it across in an honest way, isn't it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, we were talking about our role as musicians and looking back in history, and it was the stories were told through song, and it's almost it's not about being perfect, it's about human, it's about being in the room with someone actually, and I think that's what happened in production is that you made yourself go inside a fridge or like a dentist. It became too sterile
exactly, and when you're editing everything
because I think we just went off in a trajectory that was a little bit like for perfection when actually there are some stars that warrant that.
Yeah.
But really, because when you go to see a live gig, to feel it, to be there, I mean, shit, man, there's nothing better in the whole world than that, really. Yeah. Yeah. One of the top experiences you could have.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in a festival field. Oh. Sorry, don't get me started.
Festival field.
Especially if you remember next day.
Even better.
Good point.
Even better.
So then, next to the last article, the bucket list. So before you die.
Okay.
Have you heard that expression before, a bucket list?
Never, ever.
It means, go on, you explain
something. Well, it means that it's things that you need to do before you die.
Okay. Kick the anything, bucket means die.
Yeah. Is there anything that you really want to do?
I mean, a lot of things, actually. On the astronomy side of the part of it, I'm into astronomy a lot. I really like, I have a telescope and enjoy all that. I want to go to see Northern Lights. Want to go to the fjords?
Yes, fjords.
Fjords. And spend a week there with all the Northern Lights. That's going to be, you know, a game changer as well, you know, experience that thing. On a professional level, yes, keep. These days I don't have a goal. I mean, I just want to keep working on as best records and keep improving myself. You know, it's like, you know, one of the things that I really like about the industry is that, you know, the guys that I admire, the mixing engineers, they're all 50s, 60s. So it's a long career. You know, it's not. So I'm not in a hurry. I'm going to keep learning, improving, and enjoying the path. And actually, I don't know. As I told you that I live the present a lot.
Yeah.
I don't have that many. These days I just enjoy
what it's...
Well, the Northern Lights. Well, when you go, we'll come with you, because I've always wanted to do that. Well, let's go to Norway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to see
now?
Them.
Now?
Yeah,
no.
Let's go there, let's go there. Well, I don't think... Are they around this time of year? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, it's now. It's from October to March. Right. That's the main... The best part of the year.
Right, okay, well, I didn't know that. We should go.
Or we can have lunch before... And we can
and
go.
Then we can go. Yeah.
Well, that's a good idea. Yeah. Well, of course, lunch in Spain. I mean, what time is it? I don't know. It's about probably 3:30. I mean, this is just sort of it's on the edge of lunch, but yeah. we'll have lunch afterwards. No doubt about. So, the final article or final feature, I made it. So, what are we going to hear from you of what you've made? A track that you've actually created that you love. You know,
I haven't created. But it's something that it's a record that I'm very proud of being part of.
Yeah.
I engineered and mixed it.
Okay.
And I'll tell you the story after the song because the battery is about to die.
Quick.
Okay. It's better to play it back.
Okay.
Now.
Tell us who it is.
It's Sarah Rope. Everything was recorded live in a studio. Amazing musicians, Frankie Tonto, who's a Amy Winehouse drummer. Logan Bernegui, bass player for France, amazing. Ian Berson.
One of my favourite.
Yeah.
Formerly of Pilot. Exactly. January. Yeah.
And we'll discuss that. I mean, really, really cool.
Okay, play it along.
Beside me, yeah. But it is hard
great guitar work there. I love that guy.
Oh yeah, it's it was an amazing experience. There was Sarah Rope, the singer, mm-hmm. and her boyfriend, Pau Schaffer, which is an excellent keyboard and piano player. And they had these songs before. They had all the records. All the songs were written already, but they wanted to capture like playing with great musicians, the vibe. So all the musicians came to the studio. I was checking sound for everyone. It was a live situation and nobody heard the songs before.
No.
Yeah. So the point was like, okay, this is the first song we're going to cut. And Pau started playing piano. She was singing over it. This is the song. All right. So they were starting.
Was the piano, was it an acoustic piano or was it?
No. Burley. Or Rhodes.
Yeah.
There are Burley and Rhodes on depending on each song. So, they started jamming. So, like, oh, this song. So, okay, let's try a little faster. Oh, cool, this groove. Oh, man, cool, it works. And just one take, two takes, next song.
Now, that's the way
that
to do
was
it,
that was the whole record. You know, bass, guitar, keyboards. The vocals were they cut it the vocals later because there were no isolation. Mm. It was like rough.
Yeah, understandable.
Yeah, but it was all about capturing. There is no a single edit in the record. Nothing. So it was just music, just capturing musicians playing. That was it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Man.
And first impression for every song, you know, like this is the song, okay, and just 5 minutes jamming. Oh, let's try. Oh, move this kick drum here, the groove. Let's get pop pop pop, and it was just happening. You know, it was unbelievable for me. Like in 1 minute listening to a song like complete like a finished record.
Yeah.
In 2 minutes of the first time that they heard for the first time the song,
that's fantastic.
Fantastic, man! Unbelievable.
And a great. I mean, talking of getting back to how it used to be, I mean that is really good because I think, and I was discussing this the other week because digital has really made us very lazy. I think, and certainly me as a guitar player.
Yeah, you know, it depends how you use it. I mean, it's about the tool.
Yeah,
it's like the hammer that you can destroy.
Yeah.
A building or build something with the same tool.
Well, yeah, that's true. And what I'm saying, I mean, like in the 70s, I was playing a lot of guitar sessions.
Yeah.
And you didn't fuck it up.
No.
You had to play.
You need a talent.
Yeah.
That's what you needed.
You really had to get it right. Yeah. There wasn't an option because, you know, if all four of you fucked up, you really are in trouble, you know. Mm-hmm. And if one person fucks up because it's on tape, it's very difficult, there was bleed, you're all doing it live.
Yep.
It's, you know, it was tricky. But now you think, oh, well, I'll do it again later and I can just edit that bit off.
Yeah.
And, you know, it does make you lazy, I think, as a musician.
Yeah.
The only thing I don't like about the digital revolution is auto-tune because for me, it's like, just do it again, you know?
It's what we're discussing.
People have become lazy with vocals.
With all these edits or all these tools, it just makes the no need for talent anymore. You know, like anyone can sing, anyone can play drums.
You take the soul out of the voice as well when you do that.
Yeah, but even though it's not, I mean, still to this day, there is no an emotion plugin, you know, that you can get more emotion. And it's all about that. You can be in tune, but be so boring.
Yeah.
Boringly in tune.
Ah, good point.
There is no plugin of coolness, you know.
Yeah. We need to invent one. What we need is a box with two knobs
we'll get
on.
Down
one
with coolness.
Coolness. Emotion, you know.
Emotion, all the way up.
Yeah.
211.
211, of course, yeah. Yeah, everybody'd be crying. The 11, they'd be, oh, no. Oh, not that record again. We can't stand it. It's too much, man.
I can't sing now. It's not the moment. It's not the right moment. OK,
okay, put it back to 10. Yeah. But you know, you have to know where is 11. Okay, this is crying. Go back to 10. It's okay.
So we just get a bit teary-eyed, but crying.
Exactly. You know, there's one piece, it's talking about that, there's one piece of music. It's a classical piece. It was Barbara Adagio for strings and the cellos. Do you know, I actually walked out of a record store when that came on because I knew I would cry and I didn't want to cry.
Wow.
And it's funny when you say
it
that.
It is so emotional. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. When that
I can't
touches
hear it.
You.
It's so beautiful.
And that song, I mean, that movement, it's all about that. It's
I
so,
run from it.
It takes your breath away. I mean, you're breathing heavily. I mean, that's amazing, you know, when that happens in music.
And certain songs, like if I played The Carpenters, and my mum used to play, because Karen Carpenter's got such a beautiful, pure voice, I cry. Mm-hmm. Because it's so beautiful. It's funny, isn't it, how music can make you feel these things.
Absolutely.
Whether it's and you have these moments in history that kind of date certain experiences or where you were. Mm-hmm. So it's a beautiful gift. Really.
And it's not always like a mathematical rule. It depends on your mood.
Yeah.
You know, like one day you listen to a song and you don't pay attention too much to that and whatever, like 2 weeks later and you're drunk and you listen to the song and it's you get into the song so amazing. What's this? I mean, and from that point, you understand the song and it's how come I didn't enjoy, before this song? So it's all about how you connect, I mean, how you feel and the kind of song and how you connect to that in that moment. It's not maths.
No,
it depends.
I also think, like the album, sometimes like one song on an album will really connect and instantly, and then over a few times, you give it time to play. It's like an onion with the shibuya, with the layers opening, because it suddenly opens up and you discover new things.
Yeah,
and it's like there's a depth that keeps you in a journey.
Mm-hmm. Engaged with it.
Yeah.
That's what I love about beautifully crafted music.
Especially with lyrics that I don't, probably because I haven't be able to speak English ever, before I went to LA. So for me, music in English, I never understood the lyrics and I don't pay attention to lyrics. For me, vocal, it's another instrument, melodic instrument. Mm. So when you really like a song and then you pay attention to lyrics, which is later, for me, in my case, it's always later, and it's amazing. That song becomes something else. It's not just a song. It's just a piece of art on itself. It's like something else, which is really cool.
It's a really good job that we are musicians, though, because our knowledge of Spanish is so poco that when we go out and play live gigs, it's a good job the music communicates for us.
Yeah, otherwise we would be in the shit. Bad.
Really helped.
Because lyrics, it's generally, it's another talent. I mean, you can be a really good songwriter, a good musician, but a really bad
lyricist.
It's another art on itself. It's more about writing and,
Well, I think that, listening to the Spanish songs as well, it is interesting because the language, the construction of the song has to be totally different because the language is... the way that you say things is quite different.
Yeah.
If you listen to French, a French song, that's got some sort of lilt to it because it's French. Mm-hmm. German is very difficult. Rammstein or whatever, But the American, British, same. It's a different, again, so each language has its own very special thing.
Yeah.
And really, you've got to write the song around that language and they just don't cross over. You try and sing a Spanish lyric to a British song, it just doesn't work, it
destroys and English it's more musical and it's more flexible, I think, on pronunciation. There are in Spanish there's only one way of pronunciation, there's no other possibility. And
I've never
as far as I know, you can say you or you can say Joe, you can say and it's valid.
Yeah,
You can difference of because, but in Spanish it doesn't work. It's I don't know. I don't know if in English it are shorter, but I don't know how. But it's more musical.
It's the I think because in Spanish what you've got to do, you've actually got to pronounce each vowel, haven't you?
Yeah,
each word,
everything, every letter,
and therefore, for people to understand it, you've got to pronounce it like that. You can't
exactly,
yeah. And that is, I think that's interesting. I never thought about that. Oh, good.
That's why Spanish sucks.
No, it doesn't.
Ooh, no,
I know.
We love Spain.
I know what you mean.
In music, I mean,
all I was saying is that we're really consistently trying really hard to learn. But it is taking longer than expected.
Yeah.
I think that's a good summary of our endeavours.
Indeed, that's very good.
See? We say see a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's way simpler, see. English, than Spanish, on rules and...
But we are embracing the culture and the language. It's just taking a time.
Yeah, yeah, it takes time. I mean, when I first came to LA, I couldn't speak a word. I remember being in a restaurant or whatever, and I had to ask... I was in a line waiting to be attended, and what do you want to eat? And I didn't know how to pronounce whatever, Caesar salad, for example. I didn't know, would it be Caesar, 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 what? So I was find myself saying the same, you know, the same than the guy before. You know?
I didn't
know what the hell was that. It was a random meals for months.
We've had that here, you know. I've ordered something and it's what came out was not what
not what we expected, yeah.
And I used to get, in fact, I was put off going out for lunch. I was thinking, I can't face it because, you know, I don't know what I'm going to get.
Yeah.
But
it is
all
what
good.
It is.
Well, I think we're going to cook now, I think. I think we're going to.
Oh,
we're
yeah, I'm a bit hungry.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Just
going to
have some arroz d'orno.
Possible.
I think so. We've got all the stuff ready to go. So
it's arroz al horno time, I think.
I think so.
It's o'clock, arroz al horno o'clock.
It's a rice bake dish.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Arroz
special.
Cool.
Yes, rice in the oven, basically.
Well, thank you for being so lovely.
Oh, thank you.
And yeah, I feel quite enlightened by our chat today.
Yeah, it's been very good. So, yeah. Manu Thomas, Grammy nominee many times.
That you didn't know about.
Winning.
You've got a friend here.
Engineer and producer. Our good pal who's going to be working here with us in the studio, hopefully. Thank you so much. So you can find out more about the podcast at...
podcast@supertonerecords.com. Oh, that's the email, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. And our Twitter is Susie and Simon.
Yeah, Susie and Simon. At Susie, with the S-U-Z-Y, and Simon. Simon. Right.
And, of course, you can pick it up on Mixcloud. You can look for us.
Yeah, and do write to us and ask us any questions, or if there's anything you want to know, you know, with the guests coming up, it'd be good to get you involved as well.
Yeah, great. So thank you very much, and we'll see you next time.
Hasta luego.
Hasta luego.
Thank you. Super Tone.